Hey everyone, this is Stacey Lindis from Podcast PD, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual host. Make sure you check out all of the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, welcome back. Today I'm talking with Warren Berger. He is the author of A More Beautiful Question, The Power of Inquiry to Spark Breakthrough Ideas. Oh my goodness, is there lots to learn today. You're going to love this. We're talking about the power of learning to question. Good stuff. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Innovation expert and questionologist Warren Berger has studied hundreds of the world's foremost innovators, entrepreneurs, and creative thinkers to learn how they ask questions, generate original ideas, and solve problems. He is the author of 11 books, including the soon-to-be-released The Book of Beautiful Questions, the powerful questions that will help you decide, create, connect, and lead. The bestseller, A More Beautiful Question, The Power of Inquiry to Spark Breakthrough Ideas, and the internationally acclaimed Glimmer, named one of Business Week's Best Innovation and Design Books of the Year. Warren's writing appears regularly in Fast Company, Harvard Business Review, and the New York Times. Say hi to everyone, Warren.
Hi, everyone. How are you doing this morning?
Well, Warren, glad you joined me today, and I love your book, A More Beautiful Question, and I'm looking forward to the next one coming out as well. And so before we go any further, what I'd love to do is get you to answer this for me. You call yourself a questionologist. What is this?
Well, a questionologist is like any other ologist, and that is simply someone who studies the subject at hand. So I am immersed in the study of questioning. Therefore, I have dubbed myself a questionologist. It's not an official designation. I don't know how one creates an official designation for how does one create a new ology? I'm not sure, but that's actually something I might look into over time. Is can you do that and how do you do that? But I just feel like it's very worthy of that kind of study. It's so important. The power of asking questions, the art of asking questions. Even the science behind it, you know, there's some really interesting stuff about, you know, what questioning, how it can change the way we think. So I just believe it's a great subject to go deep on. And I've done one book on it. I've got a second book coming out. Now I'll probably stay with this subject, you know, for as long as I can imagine.
Well, that's awesome, man. And it is a great subject, and I can't wait for what we're about to talk about. But I think the way you create the new area, the new term, is just the way you did it. You just start using it, and before you know it, people are using it, and you just define it how you want to.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to try to do. I'm just going to try to put it out there, and I'm actually trying to convince other people who are doing something similar to use the term as well. I'm saying, you know, when I find someone else who's really specialized in questioning, I say, hey, you know what? You're a questionologist. You're a fellow questionologist. So let's join forces. And it seems to be working pretty well.
I like that. I like that. That works perfectly. So we will move right along, and I'll be part of your questionologist team. I like that. So
right. Sounds good.
So let's discuss the following thought. At some point, we learn that it's not cool to ask a question. I mean, not just too many questions, but a question. Even though you know that others want to know the answer to your question, you know, there's a little peer pressure at work there because they kind of make you not want to ask. And sometimes for as simplistic as if, you know, no one wants to ask a question because we get out of here sooner. You know, that's one of the things that kills me is that, you know, at the end of a faculty meeting or at the end of some meeting or something, if somebody asks a question, people give them a terrible look, you know. And what's funny here, I'm not talking about kids. I'm talking about adults get into this idea that it's not cool to ask questions. What do you think about this?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely an issue. One of the things I talk about in my work and in my writing is you know, what are the enemies of questioning? And there's a bunch of them, really. There are a number of forces that work against questioning. And that explains to me why we have this interesting phenomenon in that children start out asking a lot of questions. You know, we all know that. That's kind of a thing everyone's joked about and talked about, is how many questions young kids ask. So we all are very aware of the fact that children start out at ages 3, 4, 5, and they're like question machines at that point. You know, they're just asking tons of questions. And then at some point it starts to decline. And then by the time they're teenagers, sometimes they're not asking questions at all. And then when we're in the workplace as adults, we're not questioning as much as we should. So you have to wonder, what is it that causes that precipitous decline in questioning? And to me, it's a combination of forces. You know, it's a combination of social forces, and it's everything from our own insecurity. You know, we start to get very conscious of the fact that if we ask a question, maybe it makes us look bad, or, you know, it may say to everyone, oh, well, he or she doesn't know. Why doesn't he already know that? Why does he have to ask? So we become hyper aware of that kind of pressure. And then, you know, the other factors are just like time. You know, time pressures work against questioning, because everyone sees questioning as slowing things down. So if you're in a classroom, you know, sometimes the teacher doesn't have patience for questioning, because the teacher feels like, well, I have to get through all this material, and, you know, there isn't enough time. If kids are asking a lot of questions, we're not going to get through it. We're not going to get through the material. And then that continues into the workplace. You know, same thing with your boss. You know, it's like, hey, we have a lot of stuff to cover in this meeting. And if people start asking questions, you know, the meeting is going to get bogged down. We're not going to get anywhere. So, you know, these are the various kind of pressures that work against it. And then just in general, there is this idea, I think, that questions aren't that important. They're not that valuable. We've kind of, in our society, have gotten the idea that it's all about the answers. You know, the answers are what matter. Getting the answer right on a test is all that counts. Come at your company, coming up with the brilliant idea, the answer is all that matters. You know, so questions get devalued. People think, yeah, they're not that important. So that's why one of the big things I was trying to do in my writing is to make the case of why questions are, you know, just as important or maybe more important than answers. That was one of the main arguments I was trying to hammer home in A More Beautiful Question.
And that comes through loud and clear, you know, and you know, it's interesting, because you do see that people are more interested in that answer. And let's just get straight to it, as opposed to let's ask another question based upon the question you asked or whatever. And, you know, and this is good stuff, because the beginning of your book, I think you could spend, I could spend hours just on the beginning of your book because of that type of content. And early in your book, you make this comment: this book is more concerned with questions that Google cannot easily anticipate or properly answer for you. Questions that require a different kind of search.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that one of the things that people, you know, people talk about the effect of Google and technology and having all this information at our fingertips, and how that affects questioning. Does that mean that now we can just answer any question we want, and it's so easy? And one of the things that I talk about in the book is that there's all different levels and types of questions. And the ones that are really powerful, the ones that change your life or can change the world, are the ones that can't get answered on Google. So when you start to get into really high level questioning, you're asking, you know, why hasn't someone come up with a better way to do this? Or what if we tried this approach? Or what would happen? When you start to ask those kinds of questions, you are questioning things that don't exist. You're asking questions about stuff that nobody knows yet, right? So therefore, Google can't answer it, right? Google is simply putting together all the stuff that people already know, right?
Right.
And throwing it back at us, which is great. I mean, that's really useful to be able to tap into that knowledge. But then there's a whole other level of questioning where you're getting into areas that are not easily answered. That requires you to then work on that question yourself. It's not as easy as just typing it into Google. You know, that may be a start. That may give you some information that helps you get started. But you're going to have to probably do a lot more investigation and exploration in order to really answer the big questions. So that's a really important concept. And I really try to get that across to teachers as well as young people, because I love the technology revolution. And I think having that information at our fingertips is great. You know, there's no doubt about it. It's a great thing. But at the same time, we'd be making a huge mistake if we think that all the answers are there at our fingertips and that it's really easy to answer any question. If people start to think that, then they're missing out on something really important.
That's so on the money. It's just this whole idea of looking at the questions and just understanding the value that they bring to whatever it is that we're doing. And too often just people getting into the idea that, let's ask too simplistic of a question because that's not really what I need. I want, I'm just trying to get the answer as quickly as possible. You know, what I see you getting into is just this idea that we really need to step back and understand that there's so much more skill to asking questions to help us accomplish whatever it is we're trying to accomplish. Am I kind of on the right path?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important for people and students, young people, to understand that there are so many different types of questions. This is why I think questionology is so important, right? The idea of studying questions and what they can do and the different types. Because I think once people understand that, then they begin to see, the question that I type in on Google, that may be just a simple informational question, right? How do you get from point A to point B? Well, that's an important question, but it's very basic. It's basic information, right? And then if you understand the difference between that kind of a question and a really ambitious, open-ended question about how might I solve this problem in my community, that's a whole different kind of question, that involves it's just a much more ambitious question that is worth pursuing over time and maybe getting other people to help you pursue. So once young people understand that there are all these different levels and different types of questioning, then they can really start to have fun with it. I mean, they can really say, they can think about their own questions and say, is this a basic question I'm asking, or is this something really powerful? Is this something that I can really embrace and adopt as my own question?
I love that. One of the things that, and that I think that is going to lead us straight into this next thought that I have, which is, the more I read, the more I want to know, and the more questions I wanted to ask you. But, there's a comment that you have in your book that really gets the reader's attention, and it goes like this: Just asking why without taking any action may be a source of stimulating thought or conversation, but it's not likely to produce change. Can you talk about how you get questions to help you produce change?
Yeah, well, one of the things I found was when I was doing my research, I talked about how people who created change, let's say someone who invented a new technology or solved a problem of some kind, they often started with a why question. And the why question was usually, you know, why hasn't someone come up with a better way to do this? Or why are we still dealing with this problem that's been bothering us for so many years? And why haven't we solved it? Okay, so that why question is often the starting point. However, that why question isn't the thing that brings about change. It's just the thing that initiates a process. Because if all you do is ask that why question, well, we all do that. And a lot of times it's just really just complaining. Gee, why hasn't someone made a better lawnmower? And then we shake our heads and then we just move on. And we say, gee, I wish someone would do that someday. So what the innovators do and what the people who make change in the world, they start with that why question and they kind of take ownership of it. And then they usually advance to another type of question that's much more active and action oriented. So whereas they started out asking, why does this problem exist? The next stage, they might be asking something like, what if, you know, what if I looked at this problem a different way? Or what if I took this challenge and then combined it with this idea that I see works over here, and I put these two things together? What, you know, what if I do that? Or they might be framing it as a how question. You know, how, I understand that there's a problem. I'm asking why this problem exists, but how do I do something about it? How could I get started? So what I find is innovators are often, they're moving through that cycle of starting with why and then asking what if, and then they're usually ending up trying to figure out how. And that gets them to the point of actually acting on their questions. And if all goes well, you know, they end up creating something new or solving a problem or, you know, doing something pretty great.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. And you know, one of the things I want to, you know, it's because a lot of times I think most people have this experience. You go into a meeting and there's lots of people who will either question something and they'll say, you know, why this or why that, but they don't take the next step, which is to say, what if, or to take it to a level where it's action. I've actually recently been in a meeting where I said, well, help us figure out how to answer your question. I'm not sure we understand what you're thinking about. And, you know, how could we correct that? And,
yeah, I think that's a big leap for a lot of people is to think about questioning as being actionable or action oriented. A lot of people just think of questioning as something you do sort of passively. You just kind of sit back and say, gee, you know, why are we doing that? And then they just expect someone to give them answers. I think what's really powerful is when you think of yourself as a more active questioner, you will think in terms of, you know, I'm going to start with that question that challenges the reality or wonders about something, but I'm not going to stop there. I'm going to also ask the kind of questions that would tap into my imagination or the imagination of the group I'm with, the kind of questions that can help us begin to brainstorm, that can help us begin to think about ideas and then help us sort of plot out what are we going to do about it? What's our next steps? So when you can start to think that way, it's amazing. It's just an amazing thing in terms of solving problems and getting stuff done. So I think you see companies now starting to embrace this. I'm seeing a lot of organizations move toward this style of questioning and thinking. And I'd love to see it taught in schools because it's a great way to think. It's a great way to train your mind to think because you then become someone who doesn't get, instead of getting frustrated by things that don't make sense, you start to see them as challenges. You start to see them as things you can attack with questioning and actually begin to maybe change.
Excellent. The one of the things that I want to make sure that I mention before we move on is that you have a cool formatting to your book. And one of the things that's really kind of neat is that there are these boxes that appear throughout. And in these boxes, there's a question and then an explanation that goes with the question. And for example, two of my favorites One of them is, why do movie tickets cost the same for hits or duds? Which, by the way, I love that question. And why does it pay to swim with dolphins? Why did you do this?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, what I was doing was looking for interesting cases where you could show a story that came out of, you know, came out of an interesting question. So if you go through the book, most of those are stories. You know, the one about swimming with dolphins was about, I believe it was the founder of one of the big tech companies. I believe it might have been Salesforce.com, which is one of the hugely successful, startup companies in Silicon Valley. And it was the story had to do with, the founder found that when he went swimming with dolphins, the experience opened up his thinking, and he had ended up having some incredible ideas while he was doing that. But then there are other stories in the book that are like, you know, about someone wondering, you know, about why it was when they were testing this microwave machine that the candy bar in their pocket melted, and it ended up leading to the creation of the microwave oven. And there's just all these interesting questions that came about from someone saying, you know, gee, why did this happen? And what does this mean that this thing I just noticed? What possibilities does that create? And oftentimes those kinds of questions then led to an interesting story or an innovation. So I probably have about 15 of those running, 15 or 20 of those running throughout the book. You know, the story of Gatorade and how Gatorade started with a football coach asking a question about, you know, why are my players all getting dehydrated? You know, and it ends up, you know, leading to the creation of this product. I found that was not only was it interesting reading, you know, because they're all interesting little stories, but again, it just hammered home that point that I was trying to make in the book, that questions are often the starting point of something really big. And that's why questions are valuable, right? So if you know, in trying to make this case to everyone that questions are really important, you know, they're as important as answers. This is how I'm trying to show it, is saying all of these great things never would have happened if the person hadn't started by asking that question.
That's so excellent, and it's so spot on. And it's funny because when I read the first one, I thought, this is cool. And then when I found the second one, I went, oh, I can't wait. So I started flipping forward, reading more of them before I continued reading. So great impact on me as a reader. I love those stories that go with those questions. Awesome.
And I keep hearing about more all the time. You know, when you look at the tech world in Silicon Valley, you know, you just run into these stories every day. You know, almost every startup company began with some interesting question that somebody was asking, you know, usually having to do with a problem they were dealing with. You know, they were just kind of looking at a situation or a problem and saying, you know, why does this problem exist? You know, and why hasn't someone come up with a way to solve this problem, maybe by doing this or doing that? That ends up being the question that they don't have the answer, by the way. They usually, when they're starting, they don't know, you know,
right.
They're just like the rest of us. It's kind of a puzzle, you know, but, they stay with it and they work on that question. And if they can answer it, then they get their, you know, their $1 billion payout. So it's pretty good.
That's excellent. So one of the things I want to make sure I ask you is, you get into the idea of questioning the question. Can you talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah, well, it's just the idea that, that some questions are more powerful and more valuable than others. So when you are asking questions and deciding which questions you want to talk about, which questions you want to pursue, or which questions your organization or your classroom might want to focus on, it can be a good idea to question the question before you just pursue it. You know, say, why is this the best question for us to be talking about. Are we wording it the right way? Might there be a way to expand this question a little bit? Is it an open question or a closed question? If it's a closed question, a yes or no question, maybe we want to open it up. Maybe we want to turn it into a why or a how question that's more open-ended. Or in reverse, you know, we may have an open question that works better if we focus it and turn it into a more closed question. So that's the idea of questioning the question, is to say, you know, is this the right question? Am I thinking about this question the right way? A lot of times what you find with questions is they're based on assumptions, and the assumption may be faulty. So one of the things you do when you question your question is to say, you know, what is this question based on? Is there an assumption here that maybe doesn't make sense if I think about it? So that it's always a good idea to put your own questions through that kind of rigorous investigation.
Excellent. That's and I would think that takes a little bit of you start to have to develop the idea that you need to do this, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. And the reason it's important is because, especially if you are taking questions very seriously, and if you think you're going to spend time on a question, and you're going to, if it becomes important, let's say to your organization or your group, and you say, this is going to be like our mission question, right? We're going to work on this question together for a while and try to find the answer to it. Well, if you're going to do that, then before you commit to that question, just work on it a little bit, ask questions about it, make sure it's the best question for you to be, for addressing this situation.
Excellent. One of the things I wanted to make sure that, I kind of asked you before we, continue on is that, I heard you do a presentation not too long ago. And one of the things that came out that was really neat that I tell over and over again is that, you shared that during your research and looking at this, you talked about how, comedians use questions a lot of times to, as their material, and how
exactly
that impacted your research. Can you just share a little bit about that? Because I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, you even opened that presentation with a quote from George Carlin, which I thought was neat.
Yeah, George Carlin in particular was someone who I studied. He happens to be a comedian that was a favorite of mine. But more than that, I think he's been extremely influential as a comedian on other comedians. And he kind of, laid the groundwork for a certain kind of comedy that went beyond just kind of slapstick and jokes with punchlines. You know, he started to really get into observational humor, you know, that humor that was based on, you know, looking at our own everyday human behavior and finding things that were weird or didn't make sense or were kind of crazy. And he found the humor in that. He found the humor in observing all of that. So, and that then went on to be something that Jerry Seinfeld did and lots of other people. So, I think of it as a whole school or a whole style of humor that has evolved in the last couple of decades. And it's all based on really on questioning. It's all based on looking at the world around you and asking, you're essentially asking the same question over and over, is why are people doing the silly things they do? I mean, that's the question that is at the heart of a lot of comedy. So I think that comedians are great because we can learn a lot from the way they observe, the way they step back and observe what's going on around them. And then the way that they put it into some form of a question, you know, basically asking, you know, have you ever noticed this thing, or why do people do that? So they're really good at articulating it as questions. Now, the one thing comedians don't do, I had written a piece about the difference between comedians and, let's say, innovators in Silicon Valley. They both start out with the observation. They both start out asking the questions, why are we doing this crazy stuff we do? The difference is that the innovator, the Silicon Valley innovator, then tries to change things. The innovator tries to change that behavior or solve that problem. Whereas the comedians are more just observers and commentators.
Right.
So they are just going to tell us the crazy stuff we do. And they don't try to change us. They don't tell us what we should do. They just observe the stuff we're doing and they question it. But it's a great model for I always say to people and innovators and stuff that, you know, look at what Jerry Seinfeld does when he looks at, you know, the way people sit in a chair or something like that. And, you know, you can learn from that. And there are things, if you can develop that same eye that he has, you will see opportunities. You will see product opportunities, ways to provide services for people that they're not getting. You'll just, you know, you'll see, you'll get tremendous ideas, number of ideas from watching that way.
That's awesome. You know, it's so cool what you're talking about. And by the way, a couple of my favorites by Carlin, one of them has to do with vacuum cleaning. He talks about, ever notice that people will pick stuff up and throw it back down on the floor and still try and use the vacuum to pick it up, even though they just picked it up off the floor. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You see it all the time. You know, it's funny. I just saw a commercial the other day that made me think of this, and it was a commercial for dishwashing soap. And it was had a little girl in it, and she was questioning, you know, why does her mother wash all the dishes before she puts them in the dishwasher?
Nice.
She's
nice.
Saying, you know, isn't the dishwasher's job to wash the dishes? And it was all in service of a product where they were trying to make the case that this dishwashing detergent or whatever was so powerful that you no longer had to do that pre-cleaning up of your dishes before you put it in the dishwasher. You can just put them in. But I thought it was very interesting the way they framed that commercial, because they used that model of, you know, the child questioning the things we do that don't make sense. And that's also what comedians do. You know, that's something Carlin might have said. You know, do you ever notice that people, before they put the dishes in the dishwasher, they wash them? What the heck do we need the dishwasher for? You know, so it's just a way of looking at the world and noticing things that don't make sense.
That's all. I love it. That's excellent. That's excellent. So tell me, what is one takeaway you would hope that a teacher or school administrator who reads your book would take away?
I think one of the biggest things that I would hope they take away is that it's so important to encourage the questioning and the formulation of questions by students. And I know that seems obvious in a way, but if you think about what I always run into with teachers and schools is when you talk about questioning, a lot of times they're thinking about it from the perspective of the teacher and the questions the teacher should be asking. And it always becomes, or often becomes, a conversation of how can the teacher formulate better questions or craft better questions that will then help the students learn even better, because the questions that the teacher asks are so great and so interesting that it will just light up the students. So what I want to do, where I would like to see that conversation shift, is to say, yeah, those questions that the teacher asks are really important, but that's only half of the equation. The other half is the questions that the students think of themselves. And that's really important. And that's where I think, you know, I'd love to see a lot more focus in schools and in classrooms, is how do we activate that questioning muscle? And how do we encourage kids to do it, to question freely? And then how do we help them work on their own questions to make them better and to take ownership of them? So that's the part of the conversation that I would like to see, teachers focus on. As much as they focus on crafting their own questions, I'd like to see them focus on, you know, how do I help the kids craft their questions?
Love it. Awesome. So toward the end of A More Beautiful Question, you give this advice. When you find your beautiful question, stay with it. If it's a question worth pursuing, what do you mean?
Well, what I mean by that is, a question is a great motivator. So if we're trying to do something in our lives or in our work, in our schools, in our government, or wherever, if we're trying to do something and maybe bring about a change or pursue a goal, I recommend that people articulate it as a question. It sounds simple, like, what difference would that make if I say, I'm going to drink more water this year, as opposed to saying, how might I get myself to drink more water this year? It sounds like a simple change. It's actually pretty powerful. There's some evidence that suggests a question is a lot more motivating than a statement. So I advise people that if you want to pursue something big, first articulate it as a question. And then stay with that question. Think about that question. Share it with other people. Tell people, I'm working on, there's a thing I want to change in my community or in my life or in my job, whatever. And I've figured it out. Here it is in the form of a question. I'm trying to figure out how might I find a way to do X and also do Y. Once you've put it into that question form, it's just a great thing to work on, to share with others, to get ideas from other people about it, and just to pursue. And that's what I think of as a beautiful question. It's a big, ambitious thing that you want to stay with. I think all of us have a beautiful question, or maybe several beautiful questions that we would like to pursue. And I'm just saying, write it down, turn it into a real question. And that is a real powerful tool.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And one of the things I want to make sure that I do, because I love this book. And what's really another cool thing is that you've got a new one coming out this October 2018, called The Book of Beautiful Questions, The Powerful Questions That Will Help You Decide, Create, Connect, and Lead. Want to share a little bit about your latest one?
Yeah. It came out of the first one. The first one sort of was making this case for, questioning is really important in bringing about change. We need to ask more questions, and we need to formulate big, beautiful questions that we can pursue. So I went out there and was talking about that with readers and audiences. And what I found was people really loved that concept, but they were looking sometimes for something more specific. So if they were in the field if they were in a creative field, they would wonder, what kinds of questions might help spark creativity or help with my creativity. If they were leaders of an organization, they usually wanted to know, well, when you're a leader, what kinds of questions can you ask that will really, rally the people around you or will make you more effective as a leader? So I found that there was a desire to get hold of some of these more specific, useful questions. And that became the driving force of my next book. So I just tried to identify, I picked four areas, the areas of decision-making, creativity, leadership, and then just connection, relationships, human connections with the people around you. How could questioning help in each of those four areas? And what kinds of questions can be powerful within those areas? So that's basically what the book is. And it has hundreds of questions that I got from research or talking to people that were experts in those areas. Or sometimes I cobbled the questions together myself based on what I was learning. And all of those questions are designed to help within those four specific areas of leadership, creativity, relationships, and decision making.
Sounds like a great follow-up. Look forward to it coming out.
Yeah, it's coming out in November of this year. And, I think it'll be a nice, sort of a follow-up to A More Beautiful Question, because, again, it will help people see, okay, how can I apply this questioning stuff to my life or my situation? and how can I really use it to make a difference?
Excellent. So if a listener would like to reach out to you and learn more, what would be the best way, and where can someone get a copy of A More Beautiful Question?
You can basically get a copy of A More Beautiful Question anywhere. It's online. It's on Amazon. It's on it's in bookstores. It's on Kindle. You know, it's in the various forms. And if you want to learn more about the book, you know, before you buy it, or just learn more about questioning in general, my main site is amorebeautifulquestion.com. So you just put those words together into one word, amorebeautifulquestion.com. And I advise people to just wander around on that site, because there's a lot of fun stuff. There's a lot of fun features. It has stuff on the old book as well as the new book that's coming out. But it also just has a lot of stories and features about, you know, how did questioning bring about change in this industry or in that field? What are some of the techniques that questioners use? There's all kinds of stuff like that. There's stuff about kids, you know, kids and questioning. Why are kids such great questioners, and why do they stop questioning? So there's all kinds of articles and think pieces, you know, addressing all of that stuff.
And thank you so much. And website is awesome to spend time. I spent a long time because I discovered that you have links to articles that you've written for different magazines. And it was neat going back and reading those different articles as well.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of my work for Harvard Business Review or Fast Company. I'll write for those publications, and then I'll put it back on the A More Beautiful Question website. So you can either read it there, or you can jump to the original article. And so basically everything I've written about questioning in one form or another is on that site.
Excellent place to go visit. And I will put links to your website in my show notes, as well as your contact information and so forth. So listeners, you can find it there. And so I got last two questions as we get ready to close.
Okay.
So Here we go. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
Oh, wow. 100 brand new teachers. You haven't. Well, I think, my advice would be just really pay attention to the area of curiosity and questioning. And the two things go together. You know, curiosity is basically is the interest. You can think of it as the itch to learn. And questioning is how we scratch it. It's how we scratch the itch. So pay attention to curiosity and questioning in students. Make that an important part of your process. Devote a lot of your energy to stimulating that curiosity and making it possible for the kids to question, to ask their questions, and try to find ways to do that. It's not always easy. Because there's a lot of pressures, time pressures. There will be things that might sometimes squeeze out curiosity and questioning in favor of, just getting through the lesson and prepping kids for the test and that sort of practical stuff that has to get done. So knowing that, try to still find a way to make room for questioning and curiosity, because in the end, that is what is going to help kids take ownership of their own learning.
Wonderful advice. Love it. And last question. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
Wow, that's a good one. I would go back to a writing professor that I had at Syracuse University in my college days, who was a very inspirational professor. He was a writer himself, named John Keats, not the more famous John Keats, but he was a pretty successful writer in his own right. Wrote for Esquire magazine and all kinds of well-known magazines back in the day, and he was just a very inspirational teacher who allowed us to really flex our own muscles in the classroom, our own writing muscles, and really he didn't talk so much as allowed us to work and allowed us to experiment and try things, and really helped us, you know, discover our own voice and our own style as writers. So I would go back and thank him for, you know, for bringing that wonderful style of teaching into the classroom.
Thank you for sharing. That is very cool. So Warren, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. A More Beautiful Question, The Power of Inquiry to Spark Breakthrough Ideas is thought-provoking and makes me want to go back in time and ask more questions. You know, and looking forward to the Book of Beautiful Questions coming out this fall. I'm wishing you the best in all that you do.
Thank you very much. It was great talking to you today.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.